It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it has been foggy and misty all day. A light rain is managing to fall in between. Out at the airport, they have 100% humidity, northeast winds to 5 miles per hour, and they are down to 1 mile of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain, followed by showers, followed by more rain later this afternoon. And that rain is expected to go till about 1 a.m., and then more rain tomorrow morning. The good news is mostly sunny skies for Sunday. Coming up on the Midday Report, crews continue to struggle to repair a break in a subsea fiber optic cable has cut communications to most of northern Alaska. Recovery efforts for a small plane that crashed in Wrangell St. Elias National Park last month have been called off.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden is addressing the historic strike by the United Auto Workers Union against Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. He's urging the companies to share more of the wealth.
Record corporate profits, which they have, should be shared by record contracts for the UAW.
The head of the UAW says he agrees with Biden on that point, but in a statement today, Sean Fain disputed the president's assertion that negotiations had broken down. Fain says UAW members are still working to secure higher pay and stronger protections.
We are the union!
We are the union!
Evident in the 13,000 people picketing outside three Michigan plants, the UAW's threatening to expand its strike, though, against Detroit's big three automakers if there's still no agreement. President Biden will host the president of Ukraine at the White House on Thursday. NPR's Frank Ordonez reports the visit coincides with an administration push for billions in additional aid to Ukraine.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky will visit Washington following his appearance at the UN General Assembly in New York.
And it certainly comes at a critical time. As Russia desperately seeks help from countries like North Korea for its brutal war in Ukraine, as Ukrainian forces continue to make progress in their counteroffensive.
It will be the third time that Biden and the Ukrainian leader meet at the White House. The visit comes as the Biden administration works to build support in Congress for an additional $24 billion in military and humanitarian aid for Ukraine. Zelensky is also expected to meet with members of Congress from both parties. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, the White House.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson is calling on the nation to embrace the knowledge of a difficult past at a time when some politicians are pushing to curtail discussions of racist history. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports the first black woman on the nation's high court was the keynote speaker at a memorial service for four black girls killed in a Birmingham church bombing 60 years ago.
A Ku Klux Klan bomb killed Addie Mae Collins, Denise McNair, Carol Robertson, and Cynthia Morris Wesley on Sunday morning, September 15, 1963, at 16th Street Baptist Church. From that historic pulpit, Brown Jackson said, to move forward, the nation needs the whole truth about its history.
Parts of this country's story can be hard to think about. I know that atrocities like the one we are memorializing today are difficult to remember and relive. But I also know that it is dangerous to forget them.
She warned the same forces of hate, fear, and division are still present today. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Birmingham.
It's NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. It's been more than 3 months since a break in the subsea fiber optic cable cut communications to most of northern Alaska. In a press conference on Wednesday, Quintillion, the Alaska-based communications company that owns the line, said that repair crews in the area are closer to restoring service. But as KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, they can't commit to a timeline yet.
After an ice scouring event cut a main artery of cellular and internet communications to northern Alaska, Quintillion scrambled to reach the breakage. The company expected the repair would be difficult, but they had no idea how challenging it would be. First, they encountered a lot of sea ice, which postponed the repair ship's arrival by several weeks. Then they reached the site, but that was the easy part. Michael McHale is the president of Quintillion.
We arrived on August 25th. We pretty quickly located, retrieved, and tested, and then kind of prepared the shoreside cable.
He says while this initial progress was promising, the repair experienced further delays. The biggest obstacle is that the company couldn't locate what it calls the seaside section of the cable. McHale says repair crews managed to find the lost section of the cable on Tuesday, but that success was short-lived.
We even got as close as, you know, getting it about 10 feet from the surface of the ocean and lost it last night and went back down to the seabed floor.
McHale says difficulty retrieving the seaside cable is just one of several factors that have hampered the fiber's repair. He says a later-than-usual ice season and unpredictable Arctic weather contributed to the crew's delayed arrival. Once on site, low visibility and a unique seabed have made the repair challenging.
The seabed floor in that area was very undulating and very chaotic. You know, there was some real significant ice scouring that went on this year, and it really kind of made a mess.
In the meantime, many people in the affected regions continue to experience spotty internet and cellular service. Many have opted to switch to satellite services like Starlink. For the repair, both sections of the severed cable need to be retrieved from the sea floor, raised to the surface, tested and sealed before being spliced together to reestablish a connection. Repair crews run grappling anchors along the sea floor. Buried 10 to 12 feet under the surface, the lines are located using a combination of sonar and the anchors. McHale says the repair is a methodical and delicate process.
So we want to be very careful with, you know, how we detrench that and bring that cable up to the surface so that we don't damage it any further or, you know, even break it again. And then we'd be back to excavating again.
McHale says once the seaside cable is pulled up to the ship, the repair could take 3 to 4 days to connect the two wires in a process called fusion splicing. The plan is to bury the line in the original site. McHale says although services will be live at that point, it will still take a few days for Quintillion's partners like GCI, Aztec, and other buyers to restore services.
And they will need some time to reconfigure their networks to be able to essentially re-engage and go back to the configurations that they were operating under prior to the cut.
Many residents affected by the cable break worry that repairs may not be made before the sea ice returns. McHale estimates that the crew has until mid-October before ice conditions could push the repair crew out of the area.
We do have Plan B and Plan C in the works. That is, if we're not able to get that seaside cable out back up on the stern of the ship, we'll find an area that is more accessible for grappling, pull the cable up, and we may abandon several miles of that midspan of the cable.
McHale says another option would be to rebuild a more than 50-mile section of cable line.
Those are things we hope we don't have to do, but if we have to, we will, and we'll be able to do that in the time frame, you know, to finish the work before the ice season, you know, gives us a hard stop.
McHale would not say the total estimated cost of the repairs, but said it would be in the multi-millions. He says the company has not received federal or state subsidies for the subsea cable repair. Quintillion did receive a $90 million federal grant in June for expanding a subsea broadband project connecting Nome to Homer. McHale says that project is about 3 years from completion and that it will create more resilience and network redundancy. He says that Quintillion's Arctic fiber optic network is the first of its kind in the Northern Hemisphere. McHale said that June's break was the first time a line had been cut in the company's six-year history. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Recovery efforts for a small plane that crashed in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park last month have been called off. Clint Johnson with the National Transportation Safety Board says it's rare that a wreck is this inaccessible.
It's not often we see this where we can't get to an accident site or recover the victims or the wreckage.
Alaska State Troopers reported on August 28th that a Beechcraft Bonanza carrying two people had gone missing after leaving Glen Allen the day before on the way to Ketchikan. Officials say Clayton McMartin and Melissa McMartin from Roanoke, Texas, were on the plane. The plane was last heard of 18 miles inland of Cape Yakutaga near Yakutat. A U.S. Coast Guard aircraft spotted wreckage in a glaciated area with deep crevasses near Mount Leeper in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park on August 28th. National Park staff, Alaska State Troopers, and the National Transportation Safety Board have been attempting to recover the wreckage since then, but poor weather conditions hampered early efforts. Now officials say that the wreckage location in an area with deep crevasses is permanently inaccessible. The NTSB preliminary report does not give a clear reason for the crash, but Johnson says that based on the information they have and photos of the site, it was a high-speed crash. Amazon says its new sorting facility in Anchorage will launch before the new year. It'll be the tech giant's first sorting facility in Alaska. The facility will be housed in the vacant Midtown warehouse formerly used by Sears. An Amazon spokeswoman described the facility as a, quote, last stop before our packages arrive at customers' doorsteps, close quote. There, employees will sort packages and load them onto delivery vehicles. Jenna Wright is interim CEO for the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, a nonprofit that works to promote Anchorage's businesses and economy. She says she anticipates the sorting facility will shorten shipping times for more than just Anchorage customers.
I believe that rural Alaska will be particularly positively benefited by having a sorting facility here in Anchorage. As we get more and more broadband access out across the state, we've seen an uptick in the amount of online spending that's happening.
Amazon officials say the facility will also help ease the state's supply chain disruptions. Wright says her organization is also excited for the high-paying Amazon jobs expected to be brought to Anchorage. She says right now the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport is a big employer in the city's transportation and warehouse industry, and she anticipates that Amazon will offer comparable wages.
And they pay really well at an average of $93,000, which is well above Anchorage's average annual salary of $68,000. So this Amazon facility would certainly contribute to that sector with new jobs.
Amazon officials say they couldn't yet give an estimate of how many employees will work at the facility, but Wright anticipates it will be at least 100 based on the number of parking spaces the company is adding. The village of Gwichiaje, also known as Fort Yukon, has always depended on salmon. But for the last 4 years, state and federal managers have severely restricted salmon fishing as the King and Chum runs on the Yukon River have collapsed. Now the community is starting to wonder if things will ever go back to the way they were. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports.
Ask anyone in Gwichiaje what life is like without fish. You'll get the same response.
Oh, it sucks.
That was Ida Carroll's joking take when I ran into her while getting a tour of the town. But everyone I spoke with said the same thing. Nothing is the way it's supposed to be. Gwichiaje is the Gwich'in name for Fort Yukon. The village of less than 500 people sits on the upper Yukon River, about 150 miles northeast of Fairbanks. This summer, fisheries managers closed pretty much all king and chum fishing to try to preserve the runs. That means there's no salmon to eat and no salmon to put away for the winter. Linda Englishue, who's lived here her whole life, says without smokehouses full of fish, the town even smells different.
It used to smell so good, smelling those fish. Don't even smell anymore. Mm-hmm. I know my right over here, they used to fish lots. Ooh, I used to just sit outside just smelling it.
Englishue misses the taste of her Yukon River salmon, the salmon she's known her whole life. In an effort to help out, Tanana Chiefs Conference sent residents boxes of donated sockeye from the Copper River. But Englishue says it isn't the same.
They don't taste as good as the ones I used to eat.
Yeah.
So I don't care for them. Mm-hmm. That salmon that we used to get here, oh, it was just tasty. Yeah, I could just taste it right now.
Since the late 1990s, king salmon in the Yukon have been on a slow decline. Chum have had their issues too, and in the last 4 years, both runs have crashed. Researchers are still unsure exactly what is driving the collapse. They say climate change probably plays a big role. Many people along the river blame bycatch from Bering Sea trawlers and commercial salmon fishing along the Aleutian chain. Michael Peter is second chief of Gwichaje. He says, without salmon, life here doesn't make sense.
Just like water. Water and salmon, you know, they go together. It's life.
Peter grew up learning to cut fish from his grandmother. That's what's connected him to this place. Now, instead of spending the summer working together at fish camps along the river, people are at home. He worries about young people, his kids, losing a part of their identity.
Because right now, too, I think a lot of our young people are kind of lost because of not with us having our traditional foods and our, you know, showing them our traditional values and then teaching them a lot like fish camp, you know. Going to fish camp, because that's a spiritual awakening, more or less.
Peter says younger generations are missing out on their opportunity to carry on the tradition. The salmon collapse is also just making daily life harder. Without fish, people have to rethink how they get their food. Many families are hunting more, but fueling up a boat to go, say, moose hunting costs $9 a gallon. Grocery shopping at the local AC store costs three times what it would in Anchorage. Year-round work is limited in Gwichaje, and without fish, it's hard to make ends meet. Peter says some people are leaving for Fairbanks.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people are migrating, you know, to the city.
Peter says the salmon collapse is adding to other existing threats to his community's culture and way of life. Destructive flooding wiped out his grandmother's fish camp this spring, and floods like that might get more common with climate change. Peter worries that oil development and proposed mining will threaten caribou herds his community relies on for subsistence.
I mean, it seems like we're being attacked all at one time, you know, I mean, without any consideration for our future, you know, for our kids, you know, our future, our land, our animals, our air, our water, our land, our climate, you know, I mean, the earth can only sustain so much.
Peter wants Native people to have more control over how the river and other resources are managed. Currently, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Alaska Department of Fish and Game make those decisions. Local people have opportunities to weigh in, and Peter and others in Gwichaje are actively involved. But if it were up to him, Native people would lead the process and have more say over the decisions affecting their lives.
We shouldn't have to struggle just to survive. You know, but we're survivors and we're resilient. And I think us as Native people, we need to unite as the whole state of Alaska, because we've been here, we're not going nowhere, and this has always been our home. Then who are the better managers of the land than the people themselves?
For now, Peter and his community find themselves on hold, waiting to see if fish come back next summer and starting to think about what life looks like if they don't. In Gwichaje, I'm Kavitha George.
Two new species may have been discovered in the Aleutians by a federal research vessel this summer. As KUCV's Sophia Stewart Rossi reports, scientists describe the new sea sponge and sea pen as unique ecosystem engineers.
Did it go in or not?
He's really hanging on.
Sitting on the edge.
Increasing. There it goes.
There you go. That looks good.
I don't know if the part of it broke off.
A group of scientists on the Okeanos Explorer is controlling a remotely operated vehicle over 9,000 feet down in the deep sea of the Aleutians. They're using a suction cup to collect a sea pen on the seafloor. It's a little creature that resembles a feather.
Oh, I see it. It's actually on the top of the filter. Yeah. There it is.
Yep, good eyes.
That's it.
All right, great sample. Thank you, pilots.
Yeah.
The sea pen is one of two new species the research team found this summer. They're with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration mapping the deep waters in the Aleutians for the first time. The team also found a new sea sponge. Rhian Waller was a lead biologist during the expedition. She says the new sea sponge was found while exploring a sea field in the Bering Sea. She says the field was so full of diverse organisms that it could be confused for a coral reef in the Caribbean.
You know, it was hard even to count the number of sponges that we saw. Just this huge diversity of life, diversity of sponges, diversity of corals, and then diversity of fish and crabs and sea stars and all these other organisms that use these corals and sponges as habitat.
Waller says both of the new species are ecosystem engineers. She says small organisms will live in their bodies and use them to protect themselves from predators.
Their whole body is forming this habitat that increases the number of general species that live in an area. So they're really, really important for the deep sea habitat that they are in.
She says scientists use a remote operating vehicle to take photos and videos and collect samples of the potentially new species. Waller says a big driver of the exploration is seeing what organisms live on the region's seafloor.
Aleutians is really one of these unique areas in the globe. They have this huge diversity of lots of different species. We don't yet truly understand why it's there or why this area is really great for it.
Waller says her research team used high-tech operating systems that could go thousands of meters into the deep sea. She says the crew found sea stars and corals that have never been documented in the Aleutians before. Samples of the new sea pen and sea sponge were sent to the Smithsonian to confirm that they are, in fact, a new species. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
Consumers are growing optimistic about inflation. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The University of Michigan's monthly survey finds consumers now expect inflation a year from now to be at 3.1%. That's the lowest expectation in more than 2 years. Inflation is currently at 3.7%. Consumer expectations are important because they can influence prices. Members of the United Auto Workers Union are on strike against GM, Ford, and Stellantis. The initial walkout is limited to 3 Midwestern plants. The union says the strike could grow depending on how long contract negotiations drag on. The alliance that represents film, TV, and streaming companies says it will resume negotiations next week with striking Hollywood writers. No talks planned with the Actors Union, which is also on strike. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Vermont Tourism. Trip ideas and planning tools available at vermontvacation.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 15th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose at 7:39 this morning. It will set again at 8:28. That will give us 12 hours and 49 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 73 degrees. That was set in 1985. And our record low was 33, set in 1987. Currently 51 degrees, a light rain is falling through a thick, heavy mist out at the airport. They are showing northeast winds at 5 miles per hour, and they are still down to 1 mile of visibility with 100% humidity. Rain is likely this afternoon, at least until 2 or so, followed by showers, and then rain starting up again about 5, high near 55, with east winds becoming calm. And rain tonight, too, at least until 2 a.m. or so, low around 45 overnight, northwest winds to 10. And look for that rain to start up again tomorrow morning, at least around 11 a.m. or so, and go for the rest of the day. Cloudy skies tomorrow, high near 53, north winds to 15, turning to the northwest tomorrow afternoon. The good news is, on sunny, On Sunday, mostly sunny skies with a high near 56, west winds to 30. Let's check in with a brand new one from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 44, date issued 10 a.m. on September 15th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 19th, until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 21st, in the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Tuesday, September 19th, until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 21st, at Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline, stream number 255101. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Iakulik, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Haliba Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the East Side Kodiak District, the Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Dead Man, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the Northwest of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iqaluit Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, and Southwest of Fognak sections of the and Northeast Fognak sections of the Fognak District and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the Southwest Fognak section of the Fognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of a beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 252105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office, and of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And mariners, we do have some wind scheduled for Saturday night for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles offshore. Today, look for a variable 10 to become west 25 this afternoon, except north of Dangerous Cape, southeast 20, becoming variable 10, seas to 7 feet in either case. For tonight, west 25, except northeast 15, north of Dangerous Cape with 7-foot seas. And for tomorrow, variable 10 becoming northwest 25 in the afternoon with 9-foot seas. And on Saturday night on our east side, northwest 40, seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory tonight and tomorrow, with northeast 20 becoming northwest 20 this afternoon, 6-foot seas, northwest 25 tonight becoming southwest 20 after midnight and 4-foot seas, and for tomorrow, west 15 becoming northwest 30, seas building to 7 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof, and for Saturday night, west winds to 40 knots, seas to 9 feet on our west side. Be sure and join us today for the KMXT annual meeting. We'll have a potluck and open house. Come by and say hello. That starts at 5:30 p.m. here at the KMXT studios up by the high school. Look for the dish with the octopus painted on it.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Kodiak, and welcome to the September 15th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. It's beginning to feel mighty autumnal out there. Starting to look that way, too. The ground-covering plants in the alpine and even down at sea level have really started to turn. Yellows to brilliant reds and everything in between. And then there are some things valiantly hanging on to the greens of late summer. There always seem to be pockets of microclimates in Kodiak. Some based on elevation, but others on I don't know what exactly. Sometimes it feels as though conditions change in the space of a few yards. Whatever it is that causes the pockets of differing climates, it's fun to see the color variations in vegetation. Along with the changing seasons comes another bird migration, this one bringing shorebirds, ducks, and geese to our area as they pass through to their winter grounds. or, in the case of the emperor geese, as they come south and east to Kodiak to winter. There have been a few emperor geese spotted already, and more will be arriving soon. If you head out to fish or beachcomb this weekend, bring along a pair of binoculars. Watch for birds along the kelp line. They'll often be feeding there while they dart in and out of the surf. Birds like golden plovers as they rest before heading south on a non-stop, that's right, non-stop flight to Hawaii for the winter. That's pretty impressive. You may have noticed that the number of bumblebees hanging around has started to drop off lately. But the ones that are left are huge. These are the new queens, according to bumblebee aficionado Marion Owen. Just like bears, the new queens are fattening up to survive their winter hibernation underground. Give them a break and keep your flowering plants going as long as you can. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.